was you sort of half of it was RSA really works, you know, understand how it works, and then we get into some numerical examples of good stuff, what you actually can do to use these things, use these crypto systems, and the rest of the class, and actually next class, Brian is going to take over and start really using crypto. We're going to get into protocol. We're going to start getting into protocols in a big way, and you know, this we're finally getting to the point where you've got the tools, it's time to put this stuff to use. So the homework. So problem one, we've got Fermat's little theorem. We talked about it a lot in class. You're probably quite sick of it by now. But we want to generalize this to RSA. So the first generalization is take this and show that not just the it's not just the x to the p case, but it's the x to the p minus 1 plus p, k times p minus 1 plus 1 works for any k. This generalization of Fermat's little theorem holds. So you're encouraged to, you're told to do this by induction on k. So that's pretty much all the information you need. We did an induction in class last time. So you just sort of do the same thing. K is the variable. So we can do base cases. The case k equals 0 to start with. Just plug in k equals 0 and take a look. So when k equals 0, x to the k times p minus 1 plus 1 is x to the 0 plus 1, which is x. Okay? The case 0 is done. And you can stop. Remember, we're playing dominoes here. You know, pushing over the dominoes. We just showed that the first domino falls over. That's good enough. But just to be a little bit more careful, I've got here, you don't have to have done this, the case k equal 1. That's also quite simple because you plug in k equal 1 and you get the thing you're generalizing. That's Fermat's little theorem. We've already proven that this is true. So the case k equal 1 is also trivial. Done. No problem. So let's see what happens for larger k. So assume that for a particular value for k, this is true, and prove it's true for the next value here, for k plus 1. Okay? So we want to look at this thing here, which this is what we're trying to get. And we have this here as information that we can use that'll help us along. So let's take a look. We want to show that this equals that. So let's start with that side. Okay? So that's just the left half from what we carried over in the last slide. Doing a little bit of algebra here. Nothing more than distributing x to the k plus 1 times p minus 1. Distribute that out. You get a few steps from there. You get kp minus 1. I put it in that form because we know something about x to the kp minus 1 plus 1. This part right here, we know something about. And here's the leftover. So it's really this times the leftover. Well, this, the left stuff, we know by our inductive hypothesis is just x. Actually, it's x mod p, but a mod p inside of another mod p we know we can take out. Back to homework one. So it's now just x times x to the p minus 1. X times x to the p minus 1 is x to the p. And x to the p mod p by Fermat's little theorem is x. There. X to the 1. Okay. Done. I hope this wasn't too challenging. This was a straightforward induction, and we did a sample induction. So as long as you're doing the induction on k, it might seem a little unusual here. Everything should go through fine, right? Not too bad? Okay. Stone silence. Okay. Problem two is just another little piece you need to put together RSA. We talked briefly, about the Chinese remainder theorem the first week as one important optimization when you're implementing. It's much faster to do things mod P and mod Q and then put them together than to do it mod the whole thing. If you can, if you know the factors. So in particular, what the Chinese remainder theorem does is say, if you know that the value you're looking for mod 5 is equal to 3, and mod 7 is equal to 4, now you can put together the mod 5 part and the mod 7 part into a mod 35 part and figure out what this thing is mod 35. That's what the Chinese remainder theorem does. It says, you know it mod this prime, you know it mod this prime, you can now figure it out mod the product of the primes. Okay? Well, a special case of the Chinese remainder theorem, a particularly easy one, is when it's not 3 mod 5 and 4 mod 7, but it's 3 mod 5 and also 3 mod 7. It's the same thing, mod 5 and mod 7, then you don't really have to do much work. It's just saying, well, mod 35, it's also 3. Done. And that's what this question is asking you to show. Okay? So, plug in the values I have here and get the same thing. So anyway, how would you go about this? Well, there are a few ways of doing this. I don't want to spend a lot of time, so I'm just going to sort of quickly give what I had in mind as a pretty simple way that works just fine for the purposes of this class. If x mod p equals y mod p, that means that their difference is zero. And again, by the first assignment sort of stuff, that means we can take out the intermediate mod p's here and just say x minus y when taken mod p is going to be zero. Okay? That means that x minus y is a multiple of p. Divide it by p, the remainder is zero. It's a multiple of p. Okay? Similarly, x minus y is a multiple of q. Right? Same thing. So it's a multiple of p, it's a multiple of q. These things are different primes. If it's a multiple of 5 and it's a multiple of 7, it has to be a multiple of 35. This unique factorization. So, x minus y is a multiple of p times q, the product of the primes. X minus y mod pq is therefore 0, and then we just go backwards. That means x mod pq minus y mod pq is 0, or x mod pq equals y mod pq. Special case of the Chinese remainder theorem that will turn out to be useful here. Okay? Questions? Good? People are just getting mad at that, right? Okay. It's not supposed to be that hard. But this is going to be pretty much the end of all the algebra. Now I'm getting a response. Okay. Okay. Like this is the algebraic background. Now we can actually do this stuff. Brian gets to do this stuff. Okay. So now it's just, the problem three is just putting it all together. From what you did in problem one and two, you can prove this, which is RSA. You prove that if you take an x and if you raise it to a power of this form, mod pq, you get back x. That's exactly what RSA does. Okay? How do you prove it? It's just a matter of plugging in at this point the things that you've got. So I was a little pedantic in writing this out, but I said, okay, let's use K1 as big K times Q minus 1, and K2 is big K times P minus 1. Because when I can write it that way, that means that I can say this thing that we're looking at, x to the big K, P minus 1, Q minus 1 plus 1, is when taken mod P, is x to the little k, the K1, times P minus 1 plus 1. So I just put this in this form. Essentially, I'm making this more notationally formal than I really have to. Effectively, let's go back a slide here. K times P minus 1 is a multiple of, k times P minus 1 is a multiple of P minus 1. K times P minus 1 times Q minus 1 is a multiple of Q minus 1 and a multiple of P minus 1. And what we showed in problem 1 was four things which are multiples of P minus 1 and multiples of Q minus 1. So this has really exactly the same form as problem 1 if you just sort of group the two pieces. Here I group the K and the Q minus 1 into another integer over here, then it's exactly the form we want, so that's equal to x. And similarly, mod q, this thing is going to be equal to x. So this thing is equal to x mod p, and is equal to x mod q, therefore by problem 2, it's equal to x mod pq. and you've done it. At this point, you've proven that RSA works. Okay? Now, I'd be a lot happier if people were nodding, yes, of course, rather than saying, what is he doing? That's what the stare is doing. You know, right.
This should be extra for K2, right?
The second. Oh, yeah. Sorry, this is K2. I think I've got some corrections to post. That should be a 2. Sorry. Too much cut and paste, clearly. That's how I got that X, the P before, also. Okay. Any other questions? Does this at least make sense? I hope at least you're thinking, well, this makes sense. I wouldn't have done it that way. I don't know how he came up with that, but at least it makes some sense. Please?
Yes.
Good. Okay. Good. Okay. So there's not that much there, really. It's just showing that it all works out. Okay. That's pretty much it. We're doing computation and protocols from here on, mostly. At least no more algebra, I expect. Okay. So, now we're going to use RSA. Here's an RSA encryption function. E to the x is x to the 43, mod 143. Coincidence that 43 and 143 are used. I wanted to pick some numbers that other things would work out well. It turned out these were the numbers. So, given that, you should be able to find how to decrypt things that are encrypted with this function because you can factor 143, I hope. That's not supposed to be the most challenging part of the assignment. Okay, so you want to find a decryption function d of x such that x to the d of mod 143 is the inverse. Basically, you want the decryption exponent d right there. That's all you need. Okay, so how do you do this? Well, first of all, you use your sophisticated programming techniques to discover that 143 factors as 11 times 13. Okay? And once the quantum computation is finished with this, you then need to find an inverse mod p minus 1 q minus 1. Right? This is p, this is q, so this would be p minus 1, q minus 1. We need to find an inverse of our exponent, of our encryption exponent, 43, mod that product. So we need to find d such that 43 times d mod 120 is equal to 1. And the way to do that is to use the extended Euclidean algorithm to solve an equation of this form. Because if I have a solution to this, then when I take this mod 120, this part goes away, and I've got 43y mod 120 equals 1. Okay? So, how do we do this? Well, we talked about the extended Euclidean algorithm. I gave you the extended Euclidean algorithm. We didn't do an example. Nobody seemed that interested in doing an example. We didn't do an example. So now we'll do an example.
After doing this problem, we're still not interested.
Okay.
That was ugly.
So I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on this. We'll go through pretty quickly. But it's really not that bad if you do this as a table. This is the initial setup. These are just the initial 0, 1, 1, 0, where they go. 120 and 43, your initial values that you're trying to find cofactors of go in there. And then you go in, and the way to do this, the first thing you do is you compute QI over here, which is just AI divided by BI. You get 2 with a remainder, so it'll be 2 here, with a remainder of 86, should be 34. So 34 goes in there.
34 on top.
And this will be 43. Just whatever was there goes down there. Okay? And then what goes over here? Well, 1 minus 2 times 0 goes here. 1 minus 2 times 0 is 1. 0 minus 2 times 1 is negative 2. Okay? Now let's clean that up a little bit with the magic of slide technology. And we do the next line, and I probably won't even go through all the lines, but 43 divided by 34 is 1, remainder 9. 34 goes there, 0 minus 1 times 1 minus 1, 1 minus negative 2 is positive 3. Okay? And that looks like that. What happened to that? Okay. So, next row, and quickly, 34 divided by 4 is 3, with a remainder of 7. 9 goes there. 1 minus 3 times negative 1 is 1 plus 3. 4 minus 2 minus 9 minus 11. Next. Yes. I'm a little worried that different numbers are going to come up when I hit the next slide at some point. Okay. So 9 divided by 7 is 1 with a remainder of 2. 7 goes there. Minus 1 minus 4 minus 5. 3 plus 11, 14. And we codify that. Write it in stone now. I guess I am going to finish this since we're almost done. 7 divided by 2 is 3. Remainder 1. Bring in the 2. 4 minus 4 is going to be plus 15, so we get a 19 here. 11 minus 11 minus 42 is minus 53. Okay? Now we're kind of done, but if you follow the algorithm, it'll take you through one more line. And it's actually good to do that because, let's see what happens. 2 divided by 1 is 2 with a remainder of 0. And when you get to 0, that's where you stop. That's the last line. But it's good to go through this last calculation because minus 5 minus 2 times 19 is minus 5 minus 38 is minus 43. 14 plus 2 times 53 is 14 plus 106 is 120. Do these numbers look familiar?
Yep.
They should. This is a good check. You're going to get to the point where you've got the numbers reversed, and you expect that, because this is really saying, this is a solving for 0. 120 times negative 43 plus 43 times positive 120 is 0. So that's always going to work out in the end, but you'll always get a check down here to know that you did the arithmetic right. Of course, you might check anyway. So anyway, what do you get here? What we're interested in is this value down here. Okay? The coefficient, the final coefficient of y. And the final coefficient is minus 53. Clean it up. So, oops, I didn't say anything more there. I should have another slide in here. I'm sorry. Okay, well, I'll add a slide, but here's what you need at this point. Let me see if I can use the white feature, the fresh board. Let's see. Which is that? That looks good. Okay, so now we have D.
Yeah.
Okay, no way. D equals minus 53 is what we got. Okay, I said, be sure you've got a positive exponent. Actually, you could deal with a negative exponent reasonably well. It's just invert. And you know how to take inverses. You use the extended Euclidean algorithm like we just did. But you don't want to have to do that every time you decrypt. So we want to convert this to positive. Well, this is all mod 120. So mod 120... this is the same as adding 120. It's positive 67. So 67 will be a good decryption exponent. D of x equal x to the 67 mod 143 will decrypt anything. Now, you could certainly, once you got 67, you might check the little linear equation, check that 67 and 43 are inverses. Multiply them together, take it mod 120, make sure you get 1. They're supposed to be inverses, hope you get that. And then, if you really feel like it, you can encrypt some value of your choice, like this. Put in 7 here, or whatever. do this computation, decrypt it, and see if it really works. But you already proved that it really works. You know, you have complete confidence at this point, so you don't really have to bother with this. Okay. Back to the slides. Figure out how to get back to the slides.
I had a question.
Yep.
Are we ever going to solve ones where it doesn't equal one? And if so, how?
Okay. Not really. What these... If... In practice, no. In practice, what you're trying to do most of the time is a division. And the simplest way to do division most of the time is to find a reciprocal. And then you can just multiply by the thing you were trying to divide. So you're doing 3 divided by 7, you compute 1/7, and then whatever that is, 3 times that is 3/7. Okay? And you're done. There are some funny cases where you have things that are not relatively prime that we're not going to run into at all. But it could be the case that you want to know, you want cofactors for 6 and 8 mod 4, or something where everything's a multiple of 2, or everything's got a factor of 3 or 5 or something like that. And you can do this, and what will happen is down here, the last thing down here will be the GCD, the greatest common factor. So instead of getting 1, you get whatever that greatest common factor is. At each of these points, you've got this invariant. If you remember from way back when we had there, this is an invariant that's true for all AI. So at each step, you're getting cofactors, but you're getting cofactors that work with the particular AI that you've achieved. And when you get back down here, AI is decreasing. If you want cofactors for the what's called Diophantine equation, where AX plus BY equal 1, then you hope that you've got a GCD of 1. But if you have a larger GCD, you can solve for those too. But will you have to? No. Okay. So let's just do problem 5. We went over the digital signature algorithm. We talked about why this is used. This is an alternative to RSA. It's worth doing this example to note how crufty this thing is compared to RSA. RSA, once you've got the decryption exponent, you exponentiate. You do repeated squaring, you're done. You get it. Here, we've got now all these parameters. So here's digital signature algorithm. Here are 4 public parameters. There's a secret parameter that may be my own secret parameter. The public parameters, well, most of the public parameters, Q, P, and G, might be shared by everybody. Might be government issued, or somebody decided there's some standard that's out there that we all agree on these values. Or we could individually use our own. X is my own secret value, and from that, and these 3 public parameters here, I generated my public key, Y. And then I post it. Okay, here are the public parameters there. Here's my Y. That's what's going to be used to sign things. Now, I want to sign the message 8 here. Part of the signature process is pick a random value and having a little bit of mercy on the TAs, I didn't want to say everybody picks a different random value, and there are going to be many different correct solutions, so everybody pick the same random value K. So, now it's just a matter of going through it. Signing a message M. This is from the slides originally. You have to pick the random value K and go through these steps. Okay? So let's do it. Look kind of easy as a single slide, but you actually do it. Okay, you plug in 9 squared mod 67 mod 11. It's a really bizarre operation. You take something, mod something else, and then mod again a different modulus. It all fits together here, but it's a bizarre thing to be doing. So 81 mod 67 is 14, and then 14 mod 11 is 3. So R is 3, if you haven't made any mistakes. S now you have to do some work on. In general, I actually, you know, don't forget this, I took a little bit of pity here. So here you plug things in and you get 8 plus 4 times 3 over 2, or 20 divided by 2. Now the place that I took that little bit of pity is this could have just as easily been 20 divided by 3 or by 7. Well, you can find the inverse of 3 or 7 and multiply. Actually, you know, finding the inverse of 3 mod 11 shouldn't be that hard. You don't have to go through the whole extended Euclidean algorithm. 3 times 4 is 12. Mod 11, that's 1. Done. Okay, but still, you don't even have to do an inverse here. 20 divided by 2 is just 10. You're done. 10 mod 11 is 10. So the signature is 310. Okay? Now, you want to verify that signature. Here's the slide from the notes on how you do signature verification. Again, a fair amount of work. So, here's the W value. Now, you do have to do an inverse, but this is a really easy inverse, I'm hoping. 1 divided by 10. 10 is negative 1. It's 1 less than 0. So, the inverse of negative 1, the thing you have to multiply negative 1 by to get 1, is negative 1. So, it's its own inverse. Or you could just multiply it out. 10 squared is 100. 99 is a multiple of 11. 10 squared is 1 more than a multiple of 11. And so 10 times 10 is indeed 1. So anyway, you do that inverse, you get 10. You compute the A value, you get 3. You compute the B value, you get 8. You plug into this V. Again, you're doing something mod 67. And here's where most of the work is. But Windows nice little desk calculator is plenty big enough to do this. And you can use other sources. You know, you might have to work a little bit harder if you use Excel or something like this. But yeah. 9 cubed mod 67 times 62 to the 8th mod 67. Okay. And you can even use repeated squaring. That 8 is no accident. Square it, square it, square it. So you get that, you plug it all in, you get 59 when you take the first part mod 67, you get 15 when you take the second part mod 67, and when you multiply those, you get 14, which when then taken mod 11, gives you 3. And the 3 here, that you got here, was supposed to match the first part of the signature. You use the second part of the signature as part of your calculation, so it got consumed, but then the result should match the other part of the signature, and indeed it does. So now you say, aha, this is a valid signature. Now, of course, with numbers this small, forgeries are not that difficult. But if you've got 100-digit numbers, or large numbers, where P is 160 bits, is it supposed to be, or is a Q that's supposed to be 160 bits, then you're not going to be able to forge anything. Mm-hmm.
With numbers this small, I was surprised how large the numbers in the middle got. If you're using realistic numbers, the numbers in the middle must be absolutely huge.
Well, that's why in week one we talked about efficient implementation. And if you try to do this without being cognizant of that possibility, you're going to just, you know, hang machines, and you're going to make your machines very unhappy, and you'll be unhappy. So it's very important to use the more careful algorithms that we described, something like when even 62 to the 8th power, I would hope that you would do 62 squared, I'm not requiring that, 62 mod, squared mod 67, you get that answer. That's actually not too hard because 62 is 5 less than 67, so it's negative 5. Negative 5 squared is just 25. Okay? Now you square that. Don't do this before you reduce. Square that, you get 625. Okay? 625, well, 670 is a multiple of 67, so subtract 67 from that. 603 is, so this is going to be 18. And then the last thing should be 18 squared. And 18 squared, if you work out, if I got that right. Did I do this wrong?
No, it's
22 squared. Okay, so the last step would be 22 squared equals 484. And if you take that mod 67, you'll get 15. So the intermediate expressions never got that big when you do it this way. Okay, there's a question back there?
Sure. On the previous slide, we were computing S. Mm-hmm. Some of the implementations say that we should take the hash of the message.
Okay. Yes, I intentionally didn't get into that. The issue is, normally, you wouldn't use DSA, and the actual specifications say don't use DSA to sign a raw message. What you normally do is sign a hash of a message. And you would do the same with RSA. That way, if you have a huge message, you don't want to sign pieces of it. There are a lot of problems with signing pieces of it. One, if you sign individual pieces, then the individual pieces could be rearranged, and it's not really the message you started with anymore. The other aspect is that if you, you don't need to do it. You hash it down to one small value and you sign just that. So you will usually see specifications that include the hashing as part of this. But the understanding of how DSA works, you don't need the hashing. Okay? Anything else?
I was just going to say some of those tricks, like taking 62 minus 67 and then squaring that. You should have told us those kind of things before we started this whole thing.
Well, this is part of the mathematics. You suffer a little bit, and then you appreciate those tricks more. Next time, you'll do it. Okay.
So just an observation. It seems like DSA is something that would utterly fail if you don't have a good source of random numbers on whatever machine you're using.
Pretty much all crypto will utterly fail.
Well, RSA works fine for signing, for encrypting.
But you need random primes. Yeah.
Not for key generation.
Actually, from what we've described, yes, although Brian is going to get into at some point, although I don't think today. Is it going to come up? Protocols using RSA. Normally, for even RSA encryption, you wouldn't just encrypt the raw stuff. There are attacks, remember all these multiplicative properties. If you've signed three, or if you've encrypted three and you've encrypted six, then the encryption is also encryption of, you can multiply those encryptions together, that's an encryption of 18. And that structure can be nice for certain things, and I'll talk about that way later in the class, some really useful properties of that. But for most things, you don't want somebody to be able to say, sign a voucher for a certain amount of money, and then sign the value too, and have somebody put them together and say, no, now this is a signed voucher for twice as much. Now I'll multiply two in again, and again, and again, and the voucher keeps growing. You know, those properties are somewhat undesirable. So putting in randomness is actually crucial in just about every cryptographic protocol, and Brian is going to start getting into some of these protocols that use a lot of randomness.
Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, my.